Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm Matt Hansen.
And welcome to the Senate floor.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Episode 51. Matt, it is so good to have you back on the Senate floor. You were sorely missed during our Batman commentary.
I know, but it sounds like you guys didn't need any extra help. You guys were having a ball. So I'm glad that came out well.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun, and we got a lot of great response from it. So thank you everyone who listened to our Batman commentary. And there was just a couple days ago from this recording, it was the 27th anniversary of Batman 89. And it was just so much fun to do, and we want to just thank you for everybody who downloaded and streamed it and everything of that nature. It was it was just a lot of fun to do, and I think we're going to try to do more commentaries in the future.
I think that would be great. I would love to do one when the Civil War Blu-ray comes out to follow up with our Winter Soldier one.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, I didn't even actually think about that, but that's even one that we could just do. Like, just the three of us, just Lee, you, and I,
yeah.
Like we did last time, but...
Maybe you could stay for the whole film this time.
I feel really bad about that. I love that we talked about it on Nerd Nuptial, though, as a follow-up, where the girl was just like, I'm really sorry, guys, that I had to steal him away during the commentary. Hopefully, it won't happen again. But today, our main topic is... It's something that we don't talk a lot about on the network, and we haven't really talked a lot about it on the Senate floor, mainly because we wanted this show to be a safe haven from Star Trek, just because both you and I host Star Trek shows off network. But this is the kind of news that you have to talk about, and that is Brian Fuller's future Star Trek.
Yeah, he's been keeping mum on the developments of Star Trek 2017 for quite a while now. But as we're getting closer, he's starting to make a few announcements. I'm thinking part of it too, Tristan, is there must be some kind of deal, because we all know about the big divorce between the Star Trek rights, where Paramount has the movie rights and CBS mm-hmm. has the TV rights. I'm sure there's some clause in the contract that says while Paramount is still gearing up for Star Trek Beyond the movie, maybe CBS can't do anything to advertise their stuff to take away interest from the movie. I'm sure that's a clause in that contract.
It's gotta be, yeah. And for those of you who don't know and who have been living underneath a rock, Brian Fuller is the showrunner and executive producer of the new Star Trek that's going to be coming out in early 2017. And they're going to be, right now they're all in pre-production and the writing phase. They haven't even casted it yet. And Brian Fuller, as you may know, is a previous Star Trek writer. He wrote it for a few episodes on Deep Space Nine, I think about 20 episodes of Star Trek Voyager. And then he moved on to Pushing Up Daisies, right? And Hannibal.
Pushing Daisies and Hannibal. He's a horror guy. I mean, if you want to get an idea, he wrote one of my favorite episodes of DS9, Empok Nor.
Yes, very much so. I am just so utterly excited that he is the showrunner, that his vision coming to Star Trek, and like untethered by Berman or Braga or anything like that. I'm not dogging on Berman and Braga, but they had their own vision, and you could tell that there was several times that Fuller was kind of, I don't want to say brought down, but chained or like, muzzled. You could
limited.
Just tell. Yeah, limited. Thank you. That's a better term, because I'm not trying to throw shade on Braga or Berman, but with Fuller, you could just tell that he was in limited capacity. Now he's running the show. He's got the keys to the kingdom.
Not only that, he's bringing in a hell of a writing staff, because not 2 months after he was announced, someone who I never thought would return to Star Trek in a million years is Nicholas Meyer on this writing staff.
Part of it feels like a publicity stunt if you were just an outside perspective. But at the same time, you realize that this is a genius move.
Yeah, I mean, I'm waiting for I mean, he's slowly been announcing different writing stuff. He's bringing in some novelists, which, gotta say, having just done an Enterprise rewatch, they did that with the fourth season of Enterprise when they brought in the Reeve Stevens, and that worked extremely well last time. So maybe bringing in a couple of the professional novelists isn't a horrible idea, especially if they know how to write screenplays.
Yeah, we're getting Kirsten Beyer, who writes Voyager novels, and we got Nicholas Meyer, who directed the two greatest Star Trek films of all time. And who else are we getting? I mean, there's so many names. Like, we got Rod Roddenberry as a consulting producer, right?
Right, and Alex Kurtzman is executive producing. The rest of the writing staff hasn't been announced, I don't think, yet. I'm betting, and I guess this is something that you and I can speculate on, but I'm betting that with Beyond coming out next month, and then that publicity drive will be over once the movie hits. It'll be just in time for the Vegas Con. Maybe we hear something about something there. I don't know if Fuller hasn't been announced, and I don't know if he can make it given he's in pre-production on two shows because he's also doing that Starz show. I mean, he's a very busy man, but
yeah,
we might get something. You never know.
It was really nice because he's on the It's American Gods, right? That's the other show he's on. And the thing is that they're already filming American Gods, and so like he actually said in an interview that he's like it's good because he's handing it off to a very talented executive producer who they're already in the middle of shooting, so he gets to focus on Star Trek right now, which is exactly what it needs. So even though he's a very busy man, I do not think we have to worry about his attentions being divided.
No, and I mean, it's not like this is an inexperienced person. He's been in the business since the 90s at least. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's had 2 decades worth of experience. I think he's just fine handling these big shows.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And now he gave an interview. This is... he gave it to Collider, I believe.
Collider, and I believe, was this the Saturn Awards? Because those just happened recently. I think this has something to do with some award show that he was interviewed.
I'm not quite sure. I couldn't tell you because I was just so jazzed that he was actually speaking about the show and not just like, oh yeah, we're doing it. It's going to be in 2017. It's going to be great. I mean, his lips have been under lock and key by CBS, which I think is fine, which is great. I think show creators and movie creators give out too much right now. I feel like I feel like the fans and the audience are screaming for, they want to know how the sausage is made. And I just feel like it takes away some of the magic and some of the surprise. Like, can you imagine, when was the last time you saw a cameo in a movie that surprised you?
It's been a while. I mean, I think the last time, honestly, that I can think of just offhand is when Famke Janssen and James Marsden showed up at the end of Days of Future Past.
Huh. Hey, that's a more recent example than I thought you'd be able to give, because the only one that I can think of is probably Zombieland with Bill Murray.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
But I feel like we're too involved as an audience. We don't need to know everything that happens behind the scenes. And we just need to, like, we don't even know, like, most of the time, we don't even need to know that it's happening. Just give us an announcement and then, you know, give us a trailer. I feel like that's all we need to know. But people want to know, like, when people are in talks to be in a movie. Like we knew immediately, like, it was headline news that they were talking to Michael Keaton to be in the next Spider-Man film. And I was just like, give me new, like, when he... Even if he signs on, I don't really need to know. Like, it's not going to change my perception of the movie knowing 7 months before they even start shooting that who's going to be in it.
In a way, I see what you're saying, but at the same time, this is the first new crew we've had really kind of since... Well, so we got a new crew for the JJ films, and I love that new crew. Mm-hmm. But this is the first new crew we've had since 2001. So I'm kind of excited to see, given how... Things have really changed in terms of who stars on TV these days, because back in 2000, even as recently as 2001, I think there was this perception that there are movie actors and then there are TV actors. And really, you've seen that pool come together in the recent years with stuff like just an example off the top of my head, Viola Davis, who's a big movie star, is doing a television show now.
Or American Horror Story.
Or American Horror Story. You know, so you get these, and I hate to use this term because I really don't think there is a divide, but you get these film caliber actors doing TV now. So the casting could potentially be very interesting this time around.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I like, don't get me wrong, you know, like I'd love to know the cast beforehand, but the thing is, I don't want it trickled down. Like I don't want it to say like, oh, they're in talks with this person, this person, this person. And I feel like it just divides us where they're like, oh man, they went with C, I really wanted B. And then this one group is like, yeah, but A would have been so much better. You know, it's just
the only thing that I found a little bit weird was that, remember when this first was announced, they were like, oh, Angela Bassett should be the new captain. That was based on something, an offhand comment that Brian Fuller made 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's kind of silly. But not that I wouldn't like that, but
right, right. No, I think Angela Bassett would be fantastic in the role, but that's just it, is that now that we've had that in the zeitgeist, now that that's in our the media consciousness, like whoever they cast as the captain, if you loved Angela Bassett, you're only going to be disappointed if it's not Angela Bassett. And I feel like what I want, and again, I'm not going to be angry either way. Like, whatever happens is what happens. But if I had my way, I would have them go like, okay, here are the actors and here are their characters all at once, boom. And it'd be like right before we saw the first episode.
I don't know if you're going to get that wish, because they're going to have to show some pre-screening trailers and stuff, but...
Well, that's what I meant. Like they announce it, like, a little bit before they have the first trailer or the first footage that they show us, that kind of thing.
I'm sure they might, because if memory serves, and keep in mind it's been 15 years, which blows my mind, the first time I heard about the Enterprise crew was when they were printed and announced in the old Communicator magazine, mm-hmm. I think.
Yes. One thing I'd like to do is just kind of go through his interview real quick. Just like go through the interesting bits, like the knowledge that we've gotten, and where the interviewer asks the question. He says, he's like, what was it like being in the room and finding out you're going to get the keys to the Lamborghini, i.e. Star Trek? And Brian Fuller responds with, he's like, it's interesting that you say Lamborghini, because we're using a lot of race cars as inspiration for our starships. And what does that mean to you? So, like, to me, what that screams is that this is not going to take place between the original series and TNG.
Right, and that's something else that we're going to talk about, because he specifically talked about that. But it says to me that the ship design is going to be something different, which is cool, and I think mm-hmm. it's going to possibly be, my guess, is post-Nemesis, because when I think of Lamborghinis, I think sleek.
Yeah, in the Enterprise E Sovereign class is sleek and sexy as they come.
Right, and it was looking its sleekest, even though the movie wasn't great, it was looking its sleekest in Nemesis, because it was sharp and pointy in Nemesis and looked more like an arrowhead. So I think there's a good chance this is post-Nemesis prime line.
I think so too, and I'm not gonna poo-poo anything. Like, if they come out and they actually say, oh no, it's taking place between TOS and TNG, I'm not gonna go, oh crap, I'm not gonna watch it. You know, I'm not gonna be angry. But because that's the thing, is like, you look at the Ambassador class starship, it is a great
bulky
starship. Yeah, but it is not sexy. It is not sleek.
No, it's I hate to say it, because I like the Enterprise C. I think it's a nice step in between the Excelsior and the Galaxy, but it's bulky and it looks bulky, and it's not the most attractive looking ship. So.
No, but like you said, it's a great step between the Excelsior and the Galaxy class. It is a great halfway point. I think they did a great job of designing that. But yeah, like you said, it's bulky, it's not sexy, it's not sleek, and that's fine. But if they're looking at Lamborghinis, you know, if they're looking at race cars, I think we're going to get something in the post-Nemesis era. But, you know, a lot of people, how do you feel about that, actually? Because a lot of people are thinking that if they follow the rumors, is that, like, if they do go to the TO, like between TOS and TNG, kind of like the Garrett era, if you will, a lot of people think that they're not going to stay there, that each season is going to be a different crew and a different timeline. How did you first feel about the idea of Star Trek being an anthology series?
Well, I think that because he's addressed those rumors, and I don't think this one's going to be. But
oh, I didn't know he addressed those rumors.
I think that came out actually, that this is going to be something came out to that effect. You might want to look it up. But if that were to happen in a Star Trek series, I think that's actually. That would make you want to look for just something to do differently than it's been done in the past 50 years. Mm-hmm. That would be the way to do it and kind of have it interconnected, because when you think about it, when you really think about it, Star Trek, as much as I love stuff like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Star Trek was the first ever cinematic universe for television and movies when you really stop and think about it. I know there was comics beforehand, and I know there were serials, and I know all that stuff. But when you talk about mainstream television crossing over with movies, crossing over with television again, I mean, can you really think of anything that before that that really did that? Nothing for me comes to mind personally. But so you already have this great well to play in. So it would be interesting to see an anthology series where maybe one season dictates or is mentioned in the events of another season, and somehow they all kind of come together, or, you know, what their actions culminate in whatever the final season would be. I don't know.
Yeah.
There are books like that. I read a lot of Star Trek novels where, you know, one section, you know, is an Enterprise story, and then that story is referenced and furthered when they get to the original series portion, and so on and so forth. So,
yeah, originally I was like, when I first heard about it, like that rumor that it was going to be an anthology series, my knee-jerk reaction was, no, I don't want that. I want to see the evolution of a crew over years, not just 1 year. But then I started thinking about it more and more, and then like I started thinking about the points that you just made, and it started sounding more and more attractive. But I think the clincher, and not to add to John Mills' ego, but the co-host of Aggressive Negotiations, he started talking about the idea of...
Lord knows that man doesn't need an ego boost.
We love you, John. I feel like he talked about following a family. Following the generations of a family where you start, you know, like in you know, pre-TNG area, and work your way up to even post-Nemesis. And, like, it's kind of like, you know, following we could follow the line of Sulu, you know? Like, not saying it's going to be a family that we recognize, not saying it has to be, but...
Given some of the characters' backstories that we know from other series, it probably can't be.
Right. And so I'm just saying that just for a name. So, like, say you could follow as, like, you talk about, you know, like, Hikaru Sulu on the... on the Excelsior, and then you follow Demora, you know, like she moves on to a different ship, you know, that's around the, maybe she's the captain of like an ambassador class ship or something like that. And then we move on to TNG era, and it's another Sulu, you know, just like something like that. And I just feel like if we could blend what you said and what John said, that would be an amazing epic.
Yeah, that would be cool. I never thought of it with families, but that's not a bad way to connect them. Not at all.
And we've seen that, like, with North and South. You know, we've seen that in miniseries in the past, but I think on this scale, with sci-fi and with Brian Fuller at the helm, you could do a lot.
Agreed. But I do think that he's mentioned that it's not in between Undiscovered Country and Next Generation, and it's not anthology.
Okay, so that's what you think he said. Okay.
I believe he said that. I'm going to look that up, but you keep talking. You go on to the next point.
All right. Well, one thing that isn't really a big surprise, but, you know, like we were all expecting it, but I think it still disappointed some people. It didn't disappoint me. Is, you know, the interviewer asked him, is it going to be 13 episodes or 22 episodes? And without hesitation, he said 13. And so, boom. That's done. That's decided. That's what we're looking at, 13 episode seasons. And, you know, that's become the norm for non-network TV.
You probably didn't hear me say that, but I said thank God, because that's something that I really wanted from this new series. I feel like Star Trek, as cool as it was, the 26 episode format is a dinosaur at this point. And quite frankly, given our ADD culture, we don't have time, or at least viewers don't have time for filler episodes anymore. They just take up space, and they're not that interesting. And honestly, unless you're like a hardcore fan like us, you watch some of the old series, and some of the filler episodes haven't aged as well. Do you notice that?
Yeah, they stand out. Oh, yeah, they stand out hard. Actually, it's really funny that, like, speaking of series arcs and everything like that, you know, the girl and I are rewatching Twin Peaks right now. And that was one of the first shows to really be a continual storyline. Now, I know there's tons before. I know you had soap operas. Don't, you know, get off my jock. It's, you know, Twin Peaks was the first who did it so commercially successfully in as early as 1990. And it was really interesting because the first season is only 8 episodes. And it was really fun. It was really cool. It was like watching an HBO show, you know, but from 1990. You know, like, right. That's so common for HBO to do 8 episodes or 10 episodes, like True Detective does that. And it was just really cool to see that. And then I saw that season 2, last time I watched this was in the 90s, and I watched it way too young. But I remember that season 2 is 22 episodes, and my knee-jerk reaction was just, oh, really? Like, what? Like, do we need 22 more episodes of this story? And as we're watching it, like, it's really fascinating. It's really great. But there is so much filler.
Right.
So much filler in that second season. And that's the thing, is that there's, you know, like, unless you have a procedural, like, unless it's a cop show or, like, Castle, you know, they can handle 22 episodes. They can handle 26 episodes because they really want, they want to get the bang for their buck when it comes to advertisers. But when you're dealing with streaming TV or, you know, like Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or everything like that, you can do 13 episodes. You can put that budget of 22 episodes into 13 and make them that much better, and you don't have to worry about advertisers because you have subscribers.
Right. And so this is all music to my ears. So it's not only is it just 13 episodes, but did you mention that it's all one story? So
yeah, I haven't mentioned that yet.
Serialized 13 episodes. Thank goodness.
Yes, that is what we need. That is what we need as Star Trek fans, whether you want it or not. This is what we need.
Because I do remember the days of Enterprise, especially during those first two seasons. A lot of people, I mean, and I enjoy the first two seasons, but especially during that second season, I have to say, just having rewatched the series, that second season feels like a lot of wheel spinning. So that would be terribly frustrating these days. It was terribly frustrating back then. It would be even more so now. So thank God that it's serialized.
And that's the thing, is that, like, even though, like, when season 3 came around and it was one overarching story,
it was too little too late.
And I don't think people were ready for it. I don't think people were ready for it at that time. But now, as an audience, we're more mature with our TV tastes and we're used to it. We're used to overarching stories.
I almost think we demand it at this point.
I think so too. I feel like Enterprise, like, I'm sure this is heresy to say with a lot of people, but Enterprise was ahead of its time with season 3 and season 4, and it was Trek we weren't ready for. Now we are. And this is fantastic, because what Fuller said, he says, he's like, we've got the arc of the first season entirely written out, and we've got the first 6 episodes broken down. That, for those of you who don't know what that means, is that they know exactly where they're going to start and where they're going to end for every single episode of season 1, but for the first 6 episodes,
they've got the nitty-gritty details.
Yeah, they got the nitty-gritty details. It's not written, the dialogue's not written, but they know where they want each character to go for the entire episode. Like where a breakdown is where you start the episode, where the middle is, and where the end is. And so you have the events logged out, but you don't have necessarily the dialogue written in. So this is a good sign, folks. This is like Breaking Bad type stuff going on.
Not only that, you have to realize what a good sign it is, because this is still pre-production, and we're still 7 months out from the premiere of the series. Mm-hmm. But to have this so down pat right now, it means that when Brian Fuller was hired, he must have had a clear vision of what he wanted to do. There was no meetings, there was no thumb twiddling, there was no biting nails, because honestly, when I watched, again, I hate to keep bagging on Enterprise because I really do like that show, but I watched the new Blu-rays with the behind the scenes stuff I've never heard before. Stuff that people are honest now with themselves now, 15 years out, they feel like they have more liberty to talk about what things were really like behind the scenes. And they were saying during the groundbreaking process, it was tough. because they kept clashing on you know, Braga and Berman and the studio kept clashing on what they wanted to do, and they all kind of felt that their vision for the show was creatively muddled and got lost in the fray. And I don't think that doesn't seem to be the impression that I'm getting here, which is excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree completely, because you can tell that Fuller, I mean, obviously he's not going to say anything negative, but Fuller, I feel like Fuller has a good relationship with CBS, because the interviewer said, you know, like, I'm imagining CBS saying, we need something that can stream 13 episodes. And Fuller replied with, there are 762 episodes of Star Trek television, so over 6 episodes we have to tell stories differently than they've been told for 50 years.
Right. And
that's a huge challenge.
I hate to say it, but these days when you know, because studio interference can weigh heavily. And these days, I think even with like a written interview like this, you can tell when, even by the way that the responses are worded, when someone's not been happy with how things are going. Like, you could just read in between the lines, and I'm not detecting any of that here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, he's talking about how it's so strange that it's June, and they're going to start filming in September. He said that they're probably going to go from September to March, and, like, they haven't even casted anybody yet. Like, that's weird, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, the casting is going to happen within the next couple of months. I mean, because they've already got sets building.
It's crazy. I just think about that, man. Think about how exciting this is. We're going to get new uniforms. We're going to get new comm badges. We're going to get new ships, new sets, new people. This is invigorating.
And by the way, I found the quote about the anthology thing, if you want me to read it so that you know what he said.
Yeah, go for it.
There was a question. There's been a lot of speculation about the format and setting of the new series. What would you like to put out there to whet the appetite for the audiences? And he says, I mean, it's funny. I've read that we're set before Next Generation and after Star Trek VI, which is false. I've read that it's an anthology show, which is not accurate. So it's interesting to see those suggestions and seeing the truth mixed in with them and going like, oh, they got that part right. But it's sort of, but it's sort of on the truthometer on PolitiFacts. It's sort of like some truth and a lot of like, no, that's not true. So, some of the things we've been saying, I guess, are accurate. But he's shot down the pre-TNG and anthology rumors. So,
I'm personally good with that. Like, I'd be like, if they told me it was going to be anthology or different crews, I could live with that. But the pre-TNG. I'm kind of tired of going back. You know, like, if you look at the last two iterations of Star Trek, we had Enterprise set before TOS, and then you have the JJ movies that are set during TOS. That's all going backwards.
Yeah, but at least the JJ movies, they can theoretically do whatever they want. They're not bound by anything. If this were to be set, think about it, if this were to be set between 6 and Next Gen, there's only so much they can do with that, because we already know what happens before then and we already know what happens after then. So
yeah, no, I'm not dogging on the JJ movies. I'm just saying I'm ready to move forward. I'm ready to go forward. Even if it was in like,
let's talk about that, because that's a big point of contention these days. Which timeline is it going to be in?
See, and that's the thing, is that I don't care. I don't care if it's in Prime. I don't care if it's in Kelvin. Oh, by the way, if you haven't heard, the official terminology for the JJ verse or the alternate universe is the Kelvin timeline,
which I like. That's cool, because that was the focal point.
Love it. Absolutely love it. I love the Kelvin, love the name, love everything about it. So here's the thing, is that if it's in the Prime universe, I would really appreciate it if it was post Nemesis, so that we can move forward and maybe deal with the destruction of Romulus and the ramifications that that has on the universe.
See, that's what I would like, is if it's Prime line. I think it would be nice if they acknowledged the events of the Kelvin timeline as it affects the Prime timeline. So yeah. Spock is gone and
Spock's
Romulus
gone.
Is gone.
Romulus is gone, Spock's gone. But if we're in the Kelvin timeline, I don't want it to be TOS. I want to move forward. Let's go to the 24th century in the Kelvin timeline. Let's do that. You know, like I'm not a JJ hater, even though I didn't like Star Trek Into Darkness. I'm not a JJ hater. I love the timeline. I love the differences. I love the different style and the progression and everything like that. I'm sick of the TOS storyline, and maybe that's because I was born in the 80s. I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of would like to see them move forward if it's Kelvin timeline. I honestly, before this was announced and before, you know, Brian Fuller and everybody came on board, I was hoping that it would be Calvin Timeline, because I just felt that if you're going to get new writers and stuff like that, that they'll have more liberty to tell stories when 762 hours of canon is not pre-written for them. Mm-hmm. You know, that's I would think that would be creatively confining. But given Brian Fuller and given the caliber of the people he's hired so far, I know that they're capable of working within those confines. So I'm no longer as worried as I was beforehand.
But here's the thing. Is that, think about it from this perspective. You know, Paramount, CBS, divorced. And Paramount owns the movie rights, CBS owns the TV rights. That could be way more trouble than it's worth to try to be synergistic with Paramount and figure out, like, okay, so if we, you know, like, if we're in the Kelvin timeline, I'm speaking as CBS, you know, like, if we're in the Kelvin timeline, and can we use your characters? Can we use your, you know, like, your uniforms? Can we use your com badges? Can we use your history? Because even though it's all Star Trek, the lines are muddy. And so I can see it from CBS perspective, where they're like, let's just do what we know. Let's go back to what we own from an intellectual property standpoint. And that's all of the all of the Star Trek stuff.
And that makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, I just, to me, I guess it's just it would be a little bit of a shame to me that if we only use the Kelvin timeline for three movies and that's it, because I feel like there's so much, there's a rich history and stuff like to mine there and to do things differently. But I see your point. And to that point, I mean, you would be avoiding, even though I do like the show and I feel like it's gotten better over the years, you would be, by not being synergistic with Paramount, you'd be avoiding an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. situation, where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a show that takes place in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yes. But because Marvel TV and Kevin Feige don't necessarily get along, I mean, you're never going to see Chris Evans or Robert Downey Jr. on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, they're the characters that they mention in passing, and that's about as synergistic as they get.
And also, I mean, just look at how rife with problems that relationship is, and they have the same parent company. You know, that's if they can't get that to work, what hope is there for Paramount and CBS to get something to work?
Right. So I guess that would have been, this would have been a whole lot better pre-divorce, because, I mean, then they could, it's all one company and they could just reference each other. But oh well, just like I said, it'd just be a shame to throw that timeline away and not ever do anything with it again post Beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, to mention your point, I completely get, I think it's a rich universe. I think it's ripe with opportunity, but at the same time, if we had a self-contained 3 movies, 4 movies, 5 movies even of the JJ-verse of the Kelvin timeline, I don't know, I'd be okay. I'd be like, it's a cool way to go and get an offshoot of Star Trek, where it's just like, these are self-contained stories. You know, these are this is its own epic. You can watch it, you know, like, without ever actually seeing any of the TV shows, you can watch it one by one, and then the TV show or other movies can go on and not be reliant on them. You know, like, I don't know. I just see it as its own self-contained thing. I'd be okay with that.
Right. I mean, I think that what I'm rubbing up against is that, given how a lot of fans feel about the Kelvin timeline, and I completely disagree with them, I just don't want that series' legacy to just kind of be like a footnote. I hope that it's in time accepted into the wider pantheon of canon, to where it wasn't just, oh, this is that thing that they tried to do for 3-4 movies, and yeah, that was that, and we could forget about that. Like, I hope they earn their place in the legacy of the greater Star Trek universe. But
yeah, well, time will tell. Time will tell. Now, one thing that Fuller said was that they haven't booked any directors yet, but he did say that they have booked Vincenzo Natali. I know I'm probably saying that name wrong.
No, that's right, which is interesting, because I think of him mainly as a horror director, which fits in with Brian Fuller, I guess. Yeah. But
he's going to be a producing director, but he's not directing the first episode. So it kind of makes you wonder, wouldn't Brian Fuller want to direct the first episode?
I don't know. Has he ever directed?
I guess that's a good question. I mean, like, I guess I'm just so used to the showrunners directing the first episode.
But that's never happened before in Star Trek.
Oh, well, I'm not talking Star Trek, you know, like I'm talking, like, it's very common in other areas of like, you look at Breaking Bad or you look at Mad Men or anything like that. So I'm looking at his IMDb page right now. So let's see. It looks like he's never directed. So, okay, there you go.
I think Brian Fuller he strikes me, because I've actually seen him. He was talking last year at Star Trek Vegas, and it was just after Hannibal had gone off the air. So he's getting a lot of questions, and he seems like a really amiable guy. Mm-hmm. Really interesting to hear him speak. He struck me as someone who doesn't really have an ego, that he must do everything himself. So I think that if he wants to take his hand on it, fine. But he strikes me as the kind of person who's not afraid, especially looking at what he did with American Gods and looking at the writing staff he's assembling now. This tells me that this is a man who's not afraid of delegating it to skilled people. So if he steps aside to let someone else more experienced direct, I think he'd be up for that. Absolutely, that's just my read on him.
One other thing that he talked about in the interview was, like, somebody just straight up asked him, and I mean, this is a question that we've all been asking, is this is how he phrased it. Star Trek has never filmed certain subject material because it was filmed at a time when showing a gay character or showing certain kinds of characters was frowned on. What I'm so looking forward to is to see you guys be so progressive and all-inclusive. Are you looking at it that way? And he said, absolutely. I think the progressive audience that loves Star Trek will be happy that we're continuing that tradition. So, I mean, as you talked about in the last filibuster episode, Brian Fuller's gay, and, you know, Star Trek is all about, you know, being, you know, racially blind and gender blind and everything like that. And so now it's time to be sexual orientation blind. And I think you hit it very well in the last episode, where you talked about how so you have all these conservative people who are absolutely frightened. They're terrified of gay getting in their Star Trek. And they're just imagining some ensign, you know, just like you hear the swish of the doors and he goes, hello. You know, like, that is what they're terrified of. And you hit it on the head where you said, listen, he or she does not have to be flamboyantly gay in order to get the point across. Like, speaking from a male perspective, because you're a gay man, is that, you know, like, he's an ensign, he's a lieutenant, he's a commander, he's a captain, he's whatever, and he does his job, and he's good at his job, but he just happens to go home to a man. And that's, how can you be angry at that? Or not be okay with that from any perspective.
And quite frankly, can I just... I know this is a bit of throwing down the gauntlet, and we don't like to get too divisive on this show, but it strikes me as completely odd that someone would be anti-progressivism and a Star Trek fan. To me, the two don't mix. Because Star Trek has always, since its inception in the 60s, when you have a black woman and an Asian guy and a Russian in your senior staff, it has always been, since its inception, about progressivism. And so I don't know how one can claim to embrace that message and be a fan of what Star Trek stands for, and then all of a sudden be scared that there might be a gay character or, you know, heaven forbid, another woman captain.
Yeah. I saw a comment online about the new Star Trek where it was about this article where this guy saw the word progressive and, you know, he said, he's like, hopefully, you know, like with this new show being quote unquote progressive, that it's, how did he phrase it? It was something like nothing can kill your Trek buzz better than a progressive pushing and getting preachy on you, trying to push their agenda. And I'm like, have you seen Star Trek? You know, every single iteration of Star Trek, TOS, TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, every single iteration has been about progressing the needs and the rights of others. And it's disgusting.
And not just others, specifically when you talk about some of the early stuff, the underrepresented. The women, the minorities.
That's what I meant, the underrepresented. You know, like, just making sure that everybody, that's why, you know, like, Gene Roddenberry wanted a woman as the first officer. That's why he wanted a black character who wasn't a maid, you know, and that's why he, you know, it's just, and also the Russians at the time in the 60s, you know, like, that is something, like, we don't understand in today's minds how big of a deal that was to have a Russian on the ship in the 60s.
I mean, that would be, for people who can't perspective take, that would be like having a...
North Korean or something.
No, these days it would be like having a Middle Eastern captain.
Which, oh, hey, we had in the JJ-verse.
Yeah, we did. But
and he was awesome.
But you get what I'm saying, right?
It's that I get what level. You're saying, yeah.
It's that level of enmity that we have right now. But yeah, like I said, I don't get how those two things can coincide. And it's not like I'm asking for if there's a gay character that there needs to be a I'm black on the right side and white on the other. I'm not asking for that level of episode. It's just like I said. Right. It's about when I said it on the filibuster. It's about visibility, and as long as your people are visible, perceptions change. I mean, that's what happened with Whoopi Goldberg and why she wanted to be on the show. It's not because they stuck Uhura in there and said let's make her as black as can be and she's talking jive. It was just the fact that she was visible and that she had an important job that made Whoopi Goldberg inspired and wanted to be on Star Trek.
And that's the thing, is that we're people who are asking for homosexual representation or LGBT representation, it's not to, you know, it's not to get stereotypes on the screen. That's the last thing that people want is stereotypes on the screen, because people who are against it don't want stereotypes on the screen, and people who are for it don't want stereotypes on the screen. They just want people. You know, that's the thing. Just have a character who happens to be gay, have a character who happens to be a lesbian, or you had Sisko who happens to be black, and you have Janeway who happens to be a woman. You know, it's just they're people. I know this is so simplistic, but just everybody's a person. You know, we're people. You know, we're different, but yet we're still people, and so that's what Star Trek is all about.
Right, and I mean, this is taking place in a future where none of that stuff matters theoretically.
Right.
So.
Right, and so the thing is, you're probably not going to have an episode where your gay character is fighting for his or her rights to be gay, because it won't matter in the 24th or 25th century.
I mean, the only thing you have, and I'm not asking for this, but the only way you have something like that is if you have a Wesley Justice situation where you go to some planet where it's not legal.
Yeah, you're right, you're right. Yeah, you are correct. That could very much happen. And okay, so one thing that actually I don't know why I didn't think about this, and we can end our show with this and with ideas on this. So Fuller talked about how they're not bound by broadcast standards, which we all knew, you know, we all knew that was going to be the case. We knew it intellectually, but I didn't really feel it in my bones until Fuller said it and said, because they're streaming, they can pretty much do whatever the hell they want. But he also said, he's like, you know, how often do you want to hear people swear in a Star Trek reality or something like that?
I'm not asking for it to be a Quentin Tarantino movie. But, I mean, I always found it a little bit weird, and I know it was because it was TV. But I found it weird that cursing apparently disappeared in the 24th century. Because I know if I were there, it sure as hell wouldn't. But that's fine. I mean, what I like about that is that... if you're going to really stick to this progressivism, and I'm not saying this from a gay standpoint necessarily, but given that the suits that run networks are usually so PC and really don't want to go out of their way to try anything that might offend one person, I mean, not being bound to broadcast networks and standards and practices, Star Trek can, for the first time, I think, afford to be a little bit more daring and a little bit more to go to places that it wasn't able to go to when they were answering to the UPN executives.
Yes.
So I think it's a good thing, and I think Fuller's a smart enough man, and his writing staff are smart enough people to know when they're are smart enough to toe the line between what's too little and too much.
Yes, because that's the thing, is that I want my Star Trek to be daring. I think it's going to be. I don't want it to be vulgar. I don't want it to be unnecessary. I don't want it to be torture porn like Game of Thrones. And I don't think it will be, because they know, Fuller, like you said, Fuller and the writing staff know what Star Trek is, and they know what Star Trek isn't. And even though they're not held to broadcast standards, it's still CBS, folks. It is still CBS.
Right. It's not like it's Netflix or anything.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the CBS audience is just a couple years younger than your average PBS watcher. So I think we're okay.
I was going to say, this is the first time that they're probably going to get people our age to watch something that's produced by CBS.
I know. It's so true. So, yeah, I'm not worried. I'm happy that they're not bound by broadcast standards, but at the same time, I'm not worried that it's going to go into the vulgar territory.
No, I think Fuller knows what he's working with. I mean, pushing daisies was not Hannibal, and Hannibal's not going to be Star Trek. I mean, he had different vibes for each show.
Very true, very true. All right, well, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. We want to know what you think. What do you think about the new Star Trek show? Do you think it should be in the Kelvin timeline? Do you think it should be in the Prime timeline? Are you excited as we are about all this new material that we're going to get to go over with a fine tooth comb like we do as Star Trek fans? Because we've had the same material that we've had to go over for the past 50 years, and we're finally getting some new stuff. So you can reach out to us. You can email us at contact@thenerdparty.com. You can go to our website at thenerdparty.com, or you can find us on Twitter. You can find me at TheInsaneRobin.
And you can find me at mhanson0207.
Now, before we go, and speaking of Star Trek, we have a partnership with LootCrate.com. I love LootCrate.com. We do not hawk anything on this show that we do not believe in. And I am a firm believer in the awesomeness that is LootCrate.com. So if you go to LootCrate.com/NerdParty and enter in the code NerdParty, you will save money off of a $20 subscription, a monthly subscription, to an amazing box of geek material. They will ship it to your door. You don't have to go out and shop. They'll ship it to your door. You'll get Pop Funkos. You'll get t-shirts. You'll get knickknacks. You'll get comic books. You'll get action figures. And it is absolutely cool. You get it for a very, very discounted price, where they're already saving you money, and the Nerd Party is going to save you even more money. And next month is all about the future. We're talking Futurama, Star Wars, and Star Trek. So now is the time. Go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty. Enter in code NerdParty.
Yeah, what perfect timing we had for this show, huh?
I know, right? It's like almost somebody planned it.
Right. Well, that sounds awesome, and hopefully everyone takes advantage of that. But as it stands now, this was such a cool discussion. I can't wait for Star Trek 2017. I can't wait for more announcements to come out. I'm just so excited. Tristan, I'm sure you are too. So thank you sticking with us and listening to our wild predictions about Star Trek 2017. We can't wait to find out if we're right. So until next time, we're setting a course for 2017.
Welcome to Nerd Party.